From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. Thank you for listening today. We're talking about what everyone else is talking about today, and that's COVID-19, the coronavirus, and how it's making its way not only through the country and through our state, but indeed here in the Cooley region as well. And I'm pleased that we're able to speak to Jen Rombalski today. She is the health director for the La Crosse County Health Department, and their department and Jen's whole staff really have been right on top of this issue. And Jen, I appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to join us.
I'm happy to be here.
So let's just basically start with the setup here. There's upticks in this in cases of COVID-19 across the country. Parts of the United States really quickly becoming the epicenter of this disease. How is La Crosse County faring in the midst of all of it?
So I think La Crosse County so far is doing very well. Again, time will tell how we do over the long haul. But right now, having 12 cases, and when we see cases increasing, particularly in the southern and southeastern parts of Wisconsin, we kind of see that there might be a wave coming towards us. So I think, you know, we have had a chance to really get our partnerships aligned and get our incident command structures going and be able to fine-tune our contact investigation process. And so I think we are in a really good position to be able to address if we get more cases, especially if they might come in greater numbers at a time than we've currently had.
One quick note for our audience. Newsmakers, of course, originally airs on Friday morning, but then airs a couple of times on Saturday on WLSU, also in La Crosse. And so some of the numbers that we're talking about today, very accurate at the time that we're recording, but this is a quickly developing situation. So you should be aware of that. Listeners should be aware of that. Where is people have been concerned about what symptoms they need to have, where they can get tested for this. But you're not just testing everybody who walks in a clinic door, are you?
That's right. So we do have a tiered approach to testing. Healthcare systems are using that tiered approach to determine and make sure that those that are getting tested are the ones that we're most concerned about with regards to getting severe disease, and ones that could potentially be really dangerous to be losing in terms of the numbers of individuals that might be serving in a healthcare worker role or in another role that would be really critical to lose in our community.
So testing on demand isn't really a thing. So if somebody feels like they have some of the symptoms, what should they do?
So right now, the best thing to do, if you feel like you have any of those symptoms, cough, fever, difficulty breathing, unless it's really severe, sore throat, muscle aches, you just need to be home. You need to stay home. Do not go get groceries. Do not go to the pharmacy. Send someone else who isn't symptomatic to do that for you. You know, now would be the time to stay home if you have any of those symptoms. Do not go to work. So that is the single most important message that we can give individuals if they have any symptoms. This is sort of like influenza. There's not a cure for this particular virus, so it is mostly supportive measures. It is resting and drinking fluids and those types of measures that, you know, don't typically require going to the doctor's office even. So if you do feel like your symptoms are severe, you certainly could contact your healthcare provider. You also, if you are having difficulty breathing or you are concerned about your health in an immediate fashion, that would be the time to call 911. But most individuals are experiencing mild to moderate symptoms, and they should be home, resting and taking care of themselves with those symptoms.
What do the health departments in our region do to work together to make sure that a disease like this doesn't spread beyond the borders of where it currently is?
So we do know that Monroe County has had its first case, I think, 2 days ago, perhaps, the same day that we identified that we had a confirmation of community spread, which means that an individual who has diagnosed COVID-19 did not have a travel history, nor did they have a known contact to someone who has lab-confirmed COVID-19. But our health departments always work really well together. Our, you know, my fellow health officers and their teams are working hard just like we are even if they don't have a lot of disease investigation and contact tracing. A big part of this response is communicating with partners and with our public, those that we serve, and making sure that we're all in alignment with the processes that we're using, that our messages aren't crossing. So they are very busy working on those same types of partnerships and communications like we are. And in fact, we are kind of working on a regional message that would really try to get at, just making sure that people know to stay home. And we might call that staying at home keeps us together. So I think it really is about helping people understand how important it is to be home right now. We really just need as much compliance with that request as possible.
As you're hearing from people who are in the community or members of the community, you're seeing patients coming in. Are people staying at home? Are they heeding those warnings?
You know, based upon what we currently see, we do think that La Crosse County is doing a really good job with that. It's hard to know exactly how well, but there are some measures out there for determining the number of people that are staying home. And so far, we're looking really good. It seems like we haven't had a huge problem with businesses that are, not essential businesses, not closing down. We've had, I think, really fairly good compliance across this county. It's not perfect, and that's why we continue to share the message that we all have to do our part. If any one of us doesn't take this seriously, we have the potential to become exposed and to spread the virus, and that can be very dangerous for our community right now.
Well, and that's one of the things that you see a lot on social media is people talking about that they're not in one of the major risk categories and that members of their household may not be in one of the major risk categories. And so they think that maybe the protective measures are overblown a bit. But really, the idea is not just protecting yourself, but protecting your neighbor who might be in one of those vulnerable communities or a relative who might have an underlying chronic health condition.
Yeah, we all have moms and dads, aunts and uncles, maybe grandparents yet, neighbors, friends, other relatives that are in concerning categories. And across the country, let me point out that we have noted that individuals younger than that 60 age group have had severe disease and some have been hospitalized. So it doesn't just touch those that are 60 plus and with immunocompromised positions. So I think it's important to know none of us are really immune and that we have the potential to spread this disease. And that is just frankly irresponsible right now when we have received so many messages to stay home. If we are taking a risk by going to a family member's home or not protecting ourselves when we're at the grocery store, for example, we are truly potentially causing a dangerous situation for others in our community, which could certainly include our loved ones.
I want to talk about some of the language that is used to talk about this and how it goes into reporting the numbers. You talked at different times about confirmed cases, people who have had a test done and a laboratory has confirmed that they have been that they have COVID-19. But then you've also talked about presumptive cases where people who exhibit symptoms who have been in contact with people who have confirmed cases are presumed to have the disease. Are those presumptive cases counted in the number? Like when you say so many people in La Crosse County have the virus, are you talking about the presumptive cases as well?
Yeah, this is a good question. It's very confusing. So what you haven't mentioned is also a term we use in public health called probable. And the State Department of Health Services has come out just yesterday with case definitions. So we'll be aligning with those, but to this point, they hadn't been out. So what, when we get a lab confirmed case, that's pretty clear cut. If we have, like, say, for example, one of our residents is tested in Minnesota, then that first positive is considered presumptive because in Minnesota, they have a regulation that they need to do a second confirmatory test. So we call that presumptive, but it really is a case, and so we are counting presumptive as cases. Now, the probable really means suspect, so we're talking about those that are household contacts to a case that become symptomatic after the case and are most likely to be COVID-19 but won't be tested because they don't fall into a tiered category where testing would occur. So those are the differences between those three words. And we're also trying to begin reporting the number that have recovered. So we currently have two individuals out of our 12 cases who have recovered from this. So I think that's also a very positive way to let people know that, people are getting through this.
Governor Tony Evers has now placed the state under what he's calling a safer at home order. It's kind of like a slightly gentler version of a shelter in place order, really. And it's pretty extensive as far as who can go where, for what reason, whatever. And it seems to affect a lot of people who are now not able to go to work and not able to venture out into public spaces and things like that because of this. Do you anticipate that an order like that will be helpful? Does it go far enough?
So I do think that an order like this will be very helpful. Does it go far enough? That only time will tell. So there are a number of exemptions to this order, and many of them make very, very good sense to include healthcare workers and public health officials who are really trying to be on the front lines, police and fire, and those sorts of folks that are working to respond to this situation. Also, grocery stores. But I do just want to say that we have some concerns about particularly, large stores that might be more difficult to really thoroughly clean, where there are lots of people in a store at any given time, where it might be difficult to social distance, where we may be touching surfaces that are contaminated and then touching our face. So my message would be that we really need to be careful when we're out there in one of these, exempt locations, because they're exempt doesn't mean that we should be there frequently. It doesn't mean that we should not take precautions when we're there. So, I think time will tell if this goes far enough with the number of exemptions that are listed there. But I think it is a very good order to help us get control over the spread of this virus.
We've heard talk in the media and about from national leaders about how long it might take to get a vaccine for this sort of thing out and available to the public. Is there a specific treatment regimen that patients with confirmed cases are going under, or are the symptoms simply being treated and the virus has to run its course?
Yeah, it is more on the latter. It is more about these are typically symptoms that you, if you have a fever, you would treat that with a fever-reducing medication, for example. If you have muscle aches, you might take some kind of an ibuprofen or Tylenol. You might have a muscle relaxant if it's really bad. There it's really more that you're treating the symptoms. There is not a cure for this virus, and so there isn't even an antiviral like there is for influenza. So this is really, you need to rest, you need to drink fluids, you need to, not overexert yourself, you need to not be out potentially spreading this virus. So I think, those are all important things to remember, that if you don't have severe symptoms, if they are mild or moderate, that this is something that does just have to run its course, and that this is the time for you to be home and taking care of yourself and relaxing.
You talked about a couple of people who have survived the virus. They are it's passed for them. It's over. How long until we know when the whole crisis has sort of crested? How long before we might see cases of this actually diminishing in La Crosse County or throughout the Coulee region?
I think that what we're looking at is a situation that we don't know how long it's going to take. As we continue to see cases go up, we clearly have not touched the top of this curve yet. Across the state, those cases continue to go up. Thankfully, in other areas of the country, we see that the rate of spread is beginning to decline, but case numbers continue to go up. So I think we just have to be, I think that's why the order coming when it did is really important. We don't want this to be, to have been so widespread in our communities across Wisconsin before we took action that could help reduce spread. So I think time will tell when we peak with this particular virus curve and begin to move past that peak into the downswing.
We're hearing today on Newsmakers from people from a number of walks of life all about the COVID-19 issue that we've been dealing with, and I'm asking all of them what they really, from their perspective, need for the public to do or to understand.
So what I think the public needs to do or understand is we need everyone to stay home. We heard Dr. Kowalski from Gunderson on our media briefing yesterday talk about this like it's a storm. And when we're looking at cases, those might be like raindrops in a storm, and recognizing that the storm is bigger than that, and that in typical storms, we can't change how that storm comes through. We have no control over the power or path of a storm. We do have control over the power and path of this particular situation. So the power is in the hands of every individual in this community who can help us reduce the spread by being home. I just cannot stress enough how important that is. Every time you leave your home, if it's to go on an essential travel trip to the grocery store or to get medications, that cannot be beyond essential travel, and it does not need to be frequent. We need to be planful. We need to be home as much as possible. And, you know, I just can't stress enough the importance of that message.
Jen Rombalski is the health director for the La Crosse County Health Department. I thank you very much for what you and your staff are doing to protect our community and for joining us today to share this information with our audience. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you so much. I was happy to be here.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall, and coming up on the program, we'll hear from the medical director of a rural community health center and how they're handling the COVID-19 crisis. You can find more information about it and about our coverage of it on our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, it's Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall, and we're talking about COVID-19 today. In this segment in particular, we're talking to the medical director of a rural community health center about the impact COVID-19 and the concerns about it in the public could be having on the rural medical community. I'm joined by Dr. Elizabeth Boddy, who is the medical director of Scenic Bluffs Community Health Centers. Dr. Boddy, thank you very much for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
So if I could start by just talking about the sort of the mood or atmosphere at the health center where you see patients.
Well, we've been talking about that quite a bit ourselves, as it feels very surreal is the word that keeps getting thrown around here. We're used to being a busy clinic with a lot of patients coming through on a daily basis, both for our chiropractic care, our behavioral health, our medical department. We have some complementary medicine providers as well. And we've really, in the last week, kind of pared that down to having, you know, maybe a dozen patients instead of hundreds of patients coming through the door on a daily basis.
So talk about Scenic Bluffs. What kind of services do you offer, and where are your different clinics located?
So our primary clinic is here in Cashton, Wisconsin. It's about 30 miles east of La Crosse. And at our primary clinic, we do medical primary care, family medicine. We have a dental clinic. We do behavioral health. We have currently three counselors working for us. Then we have a chiropractor, a massage therapist, and once a week we have acupuncture. Here we also do kind of in-house labs and x-rays. We have another medical clinic located in Norwalk, Wisconsin, which is another 15, 20 miles sort of east of here. And that we have open only 2 days a week right now, and we offer medical services, and half a day a week we do chiropractic in Norwalk. We also have a dental clinic in Viroqua, Wisconsin, that's housed within the Vernon Memorial Hospital facility. And we have outreach for our behavioral health in multiple school districts Oh, and I forgot. We just opened behavioral health one day a week in La Crosse as well.
So, and a lot of those services, as you mentioned, not being as heavily offered, some not at all, maybe due to concerns over the spread of this virus. Talk about what you're hearing from your patients. Are there people calling you asking if they might be sick or if they might need to be tested?
Yeah, we've had a lot of discussions both amongst ourselves and with patients about how to remain available for their primary care needs at the same time that we're protecting patients and ourselves and honoring the governor's order for trying to remain in place as much as possible. So, yep, I am hearing from patients about symptoms. I have not heard a lot of people who are overly concerned. I think I've heard very appropriate concerns, which I've appreciated. We've been trying to make sure that we get accurate information out to our patients as much as possible using social media. We've done some email outreach. We've done outreach to our Amish community in person, making sure that people are aware of the health department's recommendations on staying safe and avoiding contact with the virus. But we've managed to set up very quickly how to do a lot of telephone visits. So I'm still trying to stay in touch with all of my patients with their chronic diseases, with their diabetes and their high blood pressure, because those are still very important things to pay attention to, even in this time of increased stress and concern over infection. That's what's going to keep your immune system strong, is if you keep the rest of your body working as well as possible. So we've figured out ways to do kind of curbside blood testing if we need to, so patients who are at high risk don't have to step inside the clinic. And then we do a lot of follow-up by phone. And our staff has been wonderful about saying, you know what, I can go take a blood pressure while they stay in their car if they want to. And again, we've tried to make our facilities as safe as possible, that if someone does have to come in, they have a very low risk of contacting a lot of other people, or hopefully of contacting any viruses.
Health centers in rural communities face challenges at even the best of times. Talk about how something like this, the concerns that are raised for it, affect those challenges.
One of the primary challenges is making sure that you still have revenue to keep your doors open. It's the long and short of it. Just like any other business, and when we don't have visits, we don't have a lot of revenue. We had to, for safety reasons, we had to shut down all but emergency dental visits. So that was, you know, that's a lot of patients that aren't coming in the door. Community health centers, we're trying to talk to other health centers around the state to see how they're also managing some of that. We also work with very high-risk populations in general, people who are at or below the poverty line that don't necessarily have a lot of resources. We have a lot of elderly patients in our community that we serve who are high-risk for infection, so trying to do that outreach in a wide service area can be challenging since we serve patients from Monroe, Vernon, La Crosse, and Crawford counties on a regular basis. So I think some of the primary increase in challenges for rural communities is that we have just such a large physical space that of where our patients come from to see us, that it's hard to even keep on top of what's going on in each individual county to make sure we're providing accurate information for our patients.
So as these concerns in the communities that surround yours, as well as your community, people worried about the spread of this disease, even if there are not large numbers of it in some of the more rural areas, but still it takes a toll. And then you mentioned the financial stresses that an organization like yours might be facing in light of reduced services offered and lack of funding coming in. So, as a provider, but also as an employer, as an administrator, how are you encouraging people? What are you doing to make sure that the sort of I don't know, morale needs of your crew are being met?
As a healthcare provider, we are very aware of the need to maintain morale and attitudes. And I have to say, we have kind of an amazing staff. Everyone's done very well at pulling together. Our staff definitely has a commitment to the community. And I think giving everyone something to do and providing a plan has actually helped a lot with morale around here. Our administration has committed to not doing layoffs unless or until it's absolutely necessary. So a lot of staff are getting cross-trained in other departments. We're doing a lot more phone outreach to our patients than we normally do, just to check on them at home. For some of the older adults, especially in rural areas that live by themselves, if their neighbors don't come and check on them, they may not be getting a lot of visitors right now. So we're having staff that aren't doing their normal job kind of retrain to do some of that outreach, or to make sure that both our patients are safe and our staff are kept busy. We also got to put their projects on a big list, and anybody who has time is going to grab those projects. So we're going to try to get some things done around the building itself that have needed to be done for a long time. But I think just making that commitment to our staff that we're going to try to take care of you at the same time we're trying to take care of the community, and giving everyone a bit of a sense of purpose, has really helped with our morale. And it doesn't hurt we brought everybody pizza for lunch today. That always helps a little.
We're talking to a number of different people today on our program about COVID-19 and the community response to it. And I'm asking this question of all of our guests, and I'll ask you. What is it that you need for the public to do, or for the public to understand in your part of the state?
Well, I think what I have been trying to share with my patients and with people I speak with is just a little bit of the understanding that why we, the government and the public health departments, have taken the approach that they have, and the fact that we are trying to avoid some of the disasters, really, and the catastrophes that have happened in other countries by allowing the spread of this disease to happen as quickly as it has in other countries. And at this point, because we haven't had access to be able to test everybody to find out who is and is not carrying this virus, we have to isolate everyone and do this measure of quarantining to help slow the spread of this virus. It's the only option that we have left to us at this point, because what we don't want to see happen is the hospitals getting overloaded very quickly with the 10 to 20% of people that will be hospitalized by the infection with this virus. If we can keep this stream of people that need to be hospitalized slower, then we'll be able to handle it, and we'll all be able to weather this storm safely and together.
On that note, that sounds like an encouraging note for us to depart from this interview. Anyway, Dr. Elizabeth Boddy is the medical director of the Scenic Bluffs Community Health Centers. Dr. Boddy, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall. If you'd like more information about our show, you can visit our website. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. If you'd like to see more of Wisconsin Public Radio's coverage of COVID-19 and the coronavirus, you can visit WPR.org for all that information. Coming up, we're talking with La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot. This is Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. Today we're talking about COVID-19 and different community responses to it, to the coronavirus, and we're talking right now with La Crosse Mayor Tim Cabot, who's been kind enough to join us, talk about the city's response to the virus and what people can expect from city leaders, from police, from other providers here in our community. Mayor Cabot, thank you very much for joining us.
You bet. My pleasure to be here.
For starters, you live in La Crosse. I live in La Crosse. How are you doing?
I think things are going relatively well. I am appreciative of our residents because it does seem like people are taking this seriously and either staying home or practicing the good social distancing and really trying to be part of the solution here. So that, I think, is going as well as it can be.
A lot of buildings are closed, businesses are closed, but in terms of the government, a lot of buildings have been not offering the same services that they normally do or asking the public to find other means to get some things done. What services are still being offered by the city?
We are still providing our critical services, and I would consider those to include our emergency medical and firefighters and law enforcement. So they are still responding to calls as usual. When someone calls 911, they're getting dispatched. They are taking some extra precautions related to COVID-19. So the call itself might be a little bit different. If you're interacting with a police officer, they might, you know, keep a distance from you. They might ask you to step out of your house if they're responding to your home. Those kinds of things, but they're trying to take those precautions. We are also our water service and wastewater services are continuing as usual. Our garbage and recycling pickup is as usual. There are some crews that are out that are making some necessary utility and street repairs, and then our mass transit, our MTU, is still operating with a slightly revised schedule. So those are the essential critical services that we're still providing. City Hall itself is closed and most of our facilities are closed. We are asking people if they have questions to either send an email that they can get that information through our city website or to make a call to 608-789-CITY and leave a message and we will respond to their questions or concerns. If people need to make payments or do that type of business, we do have online, over the phone, and a Dropbox options for people. The only thing that's going on right now as far as in City Hall, other than just those critical services, is the in-person absentee voting. We do have voting taking place in the Common Council chambers, and we are doing everything we can to ensure a fair, accessible, and safe election. So we've done some things with the building and just how people are able to vote in person and still, again, maintain social distancing and all that. So I think overall our services, hopefully people aren't really seeing much of a change in those critical services, but those other things, the libraries have been closed, our parks, the parks are open, but our playgrounds are closed, and our programs have been, postponed for now. So those are the significant changes, but I think we're, again, getting through, every day as best as we can.
I'm glad you said the parks are open because it brings up a question that I wanted to ask. With people being asked to stay, for the most part, in their homes as much as possible, but really with the goal being not to come in contact with other people, a person might like to get outdoors a little bit and get a little fresh air. So public spaces, aside from playgrounds, public spaces in the city are still open?
Yes, and I think that was part of the governor's order, his safe at home order as well, is that, the expectation is not that people have to stay inside 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But, walking your dog or taking a walk outside is certainly acceptable. And for us, our parks are good places to do that as long as people are maintaining their social distancing. And the playgrounds are closed because we're just not able to deal with any lingering, if there's COVID virus and us trying to disinfect that equipment. So the playgrounds are closed and we don't want people in close contact with each other. But and we do have some trails that are closed in Hicks and Forest because of the weather and the time of the year, not because of the virus, but because of the thawing ground. So, but our marsh trails and our parks are open for people to enjoy as long as they're, again, practicing good social distancing.
The governor's order, the safer at home order, affects obviously all of us in Wisconsin, but it it comes with some teeth to it. And in fact, their office is reminding people today on social media that that order is enforceable by force of law. So what have municipalities like La Crosse been tasked with in terms of enforcing that safer at home order?
Well, we are, again, trying to remind people to, if they've got any type of, you know, first off, to stay home. If they do have business to take care of, that they're doing that and practicing the good social distancing and good hygiene, washing their hands and all that. If we do receive a call or a concern or a complaint about either a business being open or, you know, something that would be at cross purposes with the governor's order, we are investigating that, whether that's our own police department and following up and having, you know, a discussion, or we are forwarding information to the La Crosse County Health Department as well. But we are not, you know, just stopping people randomly and asking them about their business, or, you know, requiring folks to, you know, show reasons for why they might be out traveling or any of that. We're not doing that.
With the idea of something like a curfew, which is not in place currently in La Crosse, do you have a benchmark or something in mind that might trigger an activity like that?
Well, I think with all of the local and state at the state levels, just really monitoring what's been going on with the number of cases that we're seeing and here in La Crosse County. You know, we do have, at least as of yesterday, the 12 confirmed cases, and one of those is recovering. Thankfully, we've not had any deaths here in La Crosse County. From all of our information and the people that we're reaching out to, we know that the, you know, a significant increase or the worst of that is yet to come. So we really are trying to do the social distancing and the good hygiene and keeping people at home as much as possible to reduce or prolong, you know, that type of thing. And then, you know, we'll play it by ear kind of on a day-to-day basis in conversations with the governor and with others, as far as if there's other steps that need to be taken.
So the governor's order, it lasts a month, basically. It goes through the 24th or 25th of April. So in terms of evaluating what La Crosse needs to do, I guess sometime in advance of that time, will you be making decisions about whether La Crosse needs some kind of measure in place beyond that time frame?
Yes, and we have basically established our emergency operations center here early this week. We went into that mode, which is a little bit different operation. In essence, it's because of the COVID-19 pandemic, but also just as a part of the spring flooding and wanting to be prepared. So we've changed that up a little bit and have gone to this kind of uniform incident command structure, which from the outside, I don't think people will see a whole lot of difference, but it's a better way to communicate and to have kind of a command and control structure in place to respond to the increased volume of communication and inquiries and people with concerns. We're meeting on a daily basis, and in essence, we've closed City Hall. The orders to close that went into effect last week, and so through April 16th is when our city buildings are closed. I know that we will be meeting and having discussions about the next steps, you know, well in advance of April 16th. So that's been one of the challenges with this pandemic, is just how quickly things are changing on a daily basis. And we're doing our best to try to respond to that. And also to anticipate where we're going to be at for the next few weeks and the next months ahead.
I think I may know the answer to this one, but we've talked to healthcare professionals, we're talking to others today, and I'm asking everyone, and I'll ask you, what is it that you need for the public to do or to know in response to this COVID-19 epidemic that's going around?
You know, first off, thanking our public, because like I said earlier, I believe people are taking this very seriously and staying home and really trying to avoid contact with others. And, you know, if they have the option to work from home, that they're doing that. You know, we're seeing a lot of people who are stepping up to offer meals and other essentials and trying to organize efforts so that all of our people are safe and have food and shelter and those essentials. I think at this point it's just, following the governor's instructions and looking out for one another if they need to check on a neighbor or just make sure that the people in their family and kind of their close neighborhood are doing okay. And if there's any problems, to reach out to the city or the county and to request help.
Mayor Tim Cabot of La Crosse, thank you very much for your time today.
You bet. Thank you. Stay safe. Stay healthy.
Absolutely. And you do the same. This is Newsmakers from the Southwestern Bureau of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall. Thank you for joining us. If you'd like more information about WPR's coverage of the COVID-19 pandemic, you can find it on our website. That's WPR.org. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin Public Radio's Southwestern Bureau. This is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall. Today we've been talking about the community's response to COVID-19 throughout our listening area. We've heard from Mayor Tim Cabot. We've heard from the County Health Department of La Crosse County. We've heard from a rural health provider with clinics throughout our area. And now we're talking about elections because, there's one of those coming up. So we're joined now by the La Crosse County Clerk, Ginny Dankmeyer, who has been kind enough to join us on the phone. Ginny, thank you so much for your time today.
No, certainly.
So we've got an election coming up. Amid all of this, our constitutional responsibilities are still with us, and we need to choose the next series of elected officials. What election is coming up? Which offices are up for our residents to vote on coming up the first week of April?
Yeah, so on April 7th, we're going to have an election. We're being told the election's going to happen one way or another. So the clerks are preparing. We're moving forward as if the elections is going to take place. And on the ballot is our presidential preference vote. We have the Supreme Court race. There's the Court of Appeals judge. All 29 county board supervisors are up for election, so that'll be on each ballot. There's some local township village boards that are up, and then there's also going to be some school districts. There's the statewide referendum question that will also be on the ballot for the voters in La Crosse County.
Okay, and so amid all these instructions to stay home and guard yourself against others, people still need to vote. I've heard people encouraging folks to get an absentee ballot and vote by mail instead of in person.
Absentee voting in the state of Wisconsin is there. There's no excuse absentee voting, which means anybody that wants to vote absentee has that option to do it. The only thing where absentee gets restricted is if you're indefinitely confined. Those voters don't have to show a photo ID. All other absentee voters are required to show a photo ID before an absentee ballot will get mailed for them. So, yeah, in this time when you're supposed to stay home, stay safe, stay away from everybody so we can flatten the curve, we are highly encouraging and imploring voters to go to myvote.wi.gov and request that their absentee ballot be mailed for them. They can go on MyVote, they can register if they're already registered, then they can request their absentee ballot be mailed right to their house. They don't even have to leave their house, it'll come right to their mailbox, vote their ballot. The envelope will be prepaid postage, so all you have to do is put it back in the envelope after you vote the ballot, sign the certificate envelope, have a witness sign it, get the witness address, put it right back in your mailbox, and it'll come right back to the clerk.
So in terms of the ID that you normally have to show, like if I went to the clerk's office to pick up my ballot, I'd have to show an ID. How does that work if I request that ballot online?
If you request it through MyVote, it'll walk you through the process. If there's a photo ID on file, which means you voted absentee prior and you have a photo ID that we have on file, you won't need to show your photo ID again. If this is your first time voting or you've moved or had to re-register, it'll walk you through the process. You can take a picture with your smartphone of your photo ID, and then you can upload it to your file in the MyVote and then send that in.
In this new era of social distancing, a lot of people are worried about contact with others, and yet some people may not be technically savvy enough to accomplish you know, manipulating photos and stuff like that online. Is there somewhere where they might be able to get assistance? Is there a number to call if they're having a problem?
You can always call the county clerk's office, the 608-785-9581, and we will try to help and walk you through that process. There's also the process where we still have some in-person absentee voting going on. So if you absolutely just cannot find a way to get a photo or a copy of your photo ID, you can still go vote in person and show your photo ID that way. It could be as simple as just getting a photocopy of it from a printer at home, perhaps. That, you know, printers are all fancy now, and you can make photocopies from them. And you can mail that in with your absentee ballot request, too. So there's many, many ways that you can request your absentee ballot get mailed to you. It's not just on the My Vote where you're going to have to be tech savvy and upload a photo ID.
So you gave a phone number a moment ago, and I'm going to give everybody a chance to go springing for their pens and pencils while they're listening to the radio. And tell me one more time, what's the number that they can call to reach the county clerk?
The county clerk's number is 608-785-9581. Now, all absentee ballot requests go through the municipal clerk's office, but if you're having questions with My Vote or how to properly upload your photos, you can certainly give us a call, and we'll try to walk you through that the best we can, or try to help you in a way of getting a copy of your photo ID so we can get an absentee ballot mailed to you.
In terms of Election Day going on, Will polling places be open? Like, can people still go vote if they want to?
Polling places will be open. This election is going on, and even with the safer at home order, where we're trying to get people to stay home. Our clerks are still going to be there. Our poll workers are still going to be there, and they'll be ready to help the voters at the polls. It might be a little bit different setup. I think a lot of them are going to try to work in stations and only let so many voters into the polling place at a time. So you are adhering to that 6-foot social distancing circle. We want as many people to vote that needs to vote, but we also want to be safe, and we don't want to be spreading the COVID-19.
Some of your volunteers, regular volunteers, would be in some of those categories that are considered high risk factors, retired persons and people of a certain age. Are you sensing any resistance to that, or has there been any need for additional volunteers to accommodate those people who might not be able to make it?
Yes, there has definitely been some of the poll workers in that higher risk category that have decided to not work. Obviously, if there's any of the poll workers that fall in that category, we want them to stay home. We want them to be safe. If there's any poll worker and any voter, for that matter, that feels sick on Election Day, we want you to stay home. We don't need you coming to the polls, you know, and spreading this or getting other people sick. So there has been a need. We've been reaching out to some of the school teachers who aren't teaching right now. We've been reaching out to maybe some high school students, just some new citizens in the area. Anybody that's willing to come help be a poll worker right now, we are definitely bringing on some new poll workers. I think all over we're seeing that there's been some poll workers dropping off for one reason or another.
In terms of casting that absentee ballot, it requires a witness signature, which some people are arguing now. I think there might even be a lawsuit that would cause people to unnecessarily violate, if they're at risk, the social distancing requirements. Is there a way around that, or do you have a suggestion for how people might deal with achieving a witness signature if they are not able to be in the presence of other people?
Currently, there is no way around that. It is, as of right now, it is required in order for your absentee ballot to be counted. The three things that are required on your absentee ballot is a voter signature, a witness signature, and a witness address. If any one of those three are missing, your absentee ballot cannot be counted. But in these times, when it's unheard of times right now, but we just have to be creative in how we do this. One of the stories I heard, which is probably the most creative, is they had a neighbor watch through the window as they signed it. They passed it then through the door, had the witness sign it, had their address, and then handed it back or put it into the mailbox. So there's definitely ways it can be done. Sometimes we just have to be a little creative right now on how we're doing this, but still following the rules, so we're making sure everyone that wants to cast a ballot is able to here in La Crosse County.
I guess necessity is the mother of invention.
It is.
Ginny Dankmeyer is the La Crosse County Clerk. Ginny, I thank you very much for joining us today.
Certainly.
And you've been listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Ezra Wall. Our program, of course, originally airs on Friday mornings at 10 on the Ideas Network 90.3 in La Crosse. It also airs Saturday mornings at 5 and Saturday evening at 6 on La Crosse's 88.9. And for more information about our program, if you have an idea for a future show or a question about why we do what we do, we'd love to hear from you. You can find all of our contact information at WPR.org/newsmakers. Until next week, I'm Ezra Wall. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.